Armando, do you consider yourself a perfectionist?
I used to be. Then I grew up.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of your favorite podcast, The Pursuit of Perfectness, with your two hosts, Ellen Matthews and
Dennis Pacheco on the Wheels of Steel.
Over on the drums, we got
Doc Kilcaney. Kilcaney? I was trying to think of something Irish.
Keith Bergun, the only the electric musician. Okay, we got to tighten up this intro, Dennis. We got to tighten up this intro.
What intro to what? What is this? This is the pursuit of perfectness. The thing that we said before. It's a podcast about perfectionism and how it appears in our lives and in our work and in the work of the people that we admire. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What have we learned from it? These are the questions. And today is no different. Our guest for this episode is the, let's not mince words, legendary Armando Diaz. He's widely regarded as one of the best improv teachers in New York City, and I would say in the world.
Mm-hmm. I would too.
He's kind of the Johnny Appleseed of improv theaters.
Mm, yes.
Helping found the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, the Pit, and of course the Magnet Theater, which is where we call our home. Yes. And where he currently does his thing.
I love it. We're keeping it. Oh man, Armando, what a great guy. I loved this conversation. So wise. Got to hear some really fun stories about his life and his experience and his philosophy. Just really great conversation.
Yeah, it really was. And we've both known Armando for years, and we've heard some stories that we've never heard before, or in detail with in depth that we've never heard before. It was really fascinating. And stay tuned till the end, all you budding improvisers who want some advice, because we've got words of advice from the man himself at the end of the episode.
Absolutely. So without any further ado, here is our conversation with Armando Diaz.
I studied in Chicago. I grew up in the suburbs. I guess I found out that I was into comedy back in high school because I had a friend named Kevin Dorff that we both went to the same high school together, and he was super funny guy. You know, he was the kind of, you know, he was voted class clown, you know. I was a shy guy, but, you know, we were in the same chemistry class at first, and so, you know, I was the kind of person that said a joke, like, under my breath. You know, and he kind of figured out that, like, I had a sense of humor. So, you know, we bonded and stuff. And so, you know, we were in several other classes. You know, so we'd end up, like, writing sketch ideas and things like that. You know, like, filling a book full of funny captions or, you know, or, you know, like, National Lampoon, you know, the magazine, you know, like, was around, talk about that. And also, it's just, you know, you grew up with the original Saturday Night Live. So, you know, that plus all those movies that they came out with. So, you know, comedy was starting to kind of be a big thing, you know. Not that comedy didn't exist before, but, like, I think comedy's gone through a period of, like, becoming respectable. Like, now it's sort of, you know, it's a political, you know, it has a political voice now, which, you know, before it was just kind of comedy, was just kind of screwball and dumb. But now, you know, comedians are more respected, you know. But so we went to high school together. And then, you know, we kind of went our separate ways for college. And then I ran into him again. And he was going to take a class at Improv Olympic. And he really urged me to kind of join him. And I took a class. You know, I joined him in the class, so we both took our first Improv Olympic class together. And then that was a great, I had never done anything that before. And, yeah, it was just really awesome, you know? And so I fell in love with it right there. And part of it was just like the immediacy of it. Like, 'cause the time I was in film school and, you know, when it comes to like films, the gratification is so delayed because you got to write a script and you got to like do the pre-production and then you got to like shoot it. Then you got to, you know, edit it, you know, then you finally get to screen it, in front of an audience and, you know, then you get to see if it like actually plays, you know, and right. Back then you'd shoot on film. So it was too expensive to like shoot a bunch of takes. You only got to maybe do two or three takes. So you couldn't do a lot of experimentation and stuff. So you get to, you know, you just hoped that your film would work. But the other problem was like people, you know, I liked comedy. My teachers didn't. So, I'd pitch comic ideas for scripts and stuff like that. And the school really kind of looked down on, like, school really liked these pretentious, like, you know, examining the dark essence of yourself kind of movies and had no sense of humor. So I kind of felt like I didn't fit there, you know?
Did you say what school it was?
It's Columbia College. Which, you know, it's a pretty good school. I just kind of felt like back then they weren't into comedy. Now you can do a comedy degree there. Like they have, they got people that teach comedy. But back then, you know, I was just like, you know, I felt like it was, you know, some kind of interloper.
You're the founder of Magnet Theater. You started that. How does one start in improv theater?
Well, I had been teaching for a while. You know, it's like, it was just like every kind of improv scene. One thing leads to another. So, you know, I took classes at Improv Olympic and then, eventually, you know, people asked me to coach. So I was coaching a lot of teams. So I finally decided, like, oh, I don't want to work a regular job. I think I'll just try and coach and make a living off of that. Which I think some people kind of cross that. Then you realize, like, oh my goodness, you got to coach a lot just to be able to, like, make ends meet, you know? You got to have really cheap rent, too. Mm-hmm. So I was coaching, like crazy. So, you know, Monday through Friday, Saturdays and Sunday, like on Sundays, I would coach from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Wow.
And I was still like dirt poor, but it gave me a lot of experience in terms of doing that and kind of developing my style and things. And then, you know, I'd worked with the Upright Citizens Brigade, guys in Chicago, you know, we did some shows together and things like that. And those guys went out to New York to try and get a sketch show. And in the meantime, they were teaching classes and doing long form shows. And so they brought me out, cause they wanted to start a theater. And so I became their first teacher. And they got signed to Comedy Central to do their show. So I taught for them and I was running the teams and directing shows, and they eventually asked me on the show to, help them in the writer's room. So I'd be working as a writer and, you know, teaching a ton of classes and writing for the website. And, just kind of basically, you know, 24/7, just working for UCB in some form or the other. And then eventually, you know, kind of had sort of, I guess, different perspectives on things. Put that diplomatically, you know, I kind of felt like it's just like, I had a different vision for like what I wanted to do. And you know, different ideas on like culture, you know, of a theater, like what the culture of a theater should be. And so I kind of felt like I was banging my head against the wall. Like, I don't think they were very interested in my ideas. So I was like, well, you know what? I might as well just kind of move on. So I started doing my indie classes, did indie classes for a bit. I hooked up with Ali and we started The Pit. And I was his partner for about a year, and I kind of ran into the same thing, which was like, you know, I wanted to start a theater to kind of build on the good things that the you know, current improv theaters had, but improve, you know, experiment and improve and try and make it better than it, what it was, you know, because it kind of felt like there was like some shortcomings in the model. And I think one of them was just that, you know, it was a little bit high school sometimes. It was just like, if you were clearly like a funny performer, then you felt like really encouraged and welcomed. And then everybody else was kind of like, maybe they didn't know what to do with them, or it felt like they were kind of like diseased, you know, like, you know, lepers or whatever, you know, like, I don't know if they got treated as well as I thought they should be. And it's just like, I didn't like that, you know, just because somebody might not get improv, or maybe somebody's an oddball, it's just like, they're still a human being, you know, like, but
yeah,
there seemed to be like a high value about like people who were going to be like the best improvisers. And it was like, you know, well, if everybody's paying for classes, like, there's no reason why you could be kind of an average person just doing this for fun. And why can't you have a good experience with it? And, you know, you don't have to lie to anybody. Yeah. So like, okay, well, you know, maybe you won't become, you know, a comic actor or whatever, but you can continue to explore this hobby or whatever. So I thought it was one of those things where I wanted just more openness in the culture and, you know, honest feedback that it's just like, you know, and then, you know, having a methodology when it comes to like curriculum like that. I kind of found there were like ways to kind of build a curriculum that empowered people and kind of gave them more success and made sure that, you know, people were learning. So it was like, you know, so the quality of like the, like, cause one thing that I couldn't stand was just that a lot of times performers didn't even go to the class show that they were teaching. I don't know if it's like that now, but you know, that, the class would show up by themselves, you know, and do their show. And, the teacher wasn't even there. And I was just like, how could you do that? And I guess,
what?
Yeah, I could not believe it, you know, because, they're like, oh, it's a level one show, you know, like,
jeez.
The night manager can take care of it.
They need the teacher more than anybody.
Yeah.
There to support. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I was just like, I decided like, no, you have to be there. That's part of your job, and that you got to warm people up, and that you got to give notes and all that kind of stuff. So, and you know, I made a difference, you know, like that. I always feel like you come to see one of our level ones, you know, a lot of people are probably afraid, like if they've never seen improv, that they're going to watch like a train wreck, but usually it's a pretty fun, good show, you know, like that it's respectable. And
they're the best.
Yeah.
Whereas like at other places, the show would be so painful and embarrassing, you know, because,
right,
you know, people were kind of set up to fail, you know, they weren't given what they need, or maybe the ambition was too much, you know what I mean? Like, but I always felt like it's like, oh, you know, I think there's just these simple logical things you could do to train people to get the best out of them, and that you can have something that the audience is not going to cringe at, you know, that you can watch your friends and feel okay about, like, oh, okay, great, that was a fun show. Like, so many times people come and go, my God, that was a really good show. You know, you guys are really awesome. And I was like, yeah, you know, if you just do it right. And then the other thing was just like letting people know where they're at. Cause in the past, they would just put anybody on a team, you know, because they were afraid to make the decision of telling people no. They thought, oh, well, if we don't cast the person on the team, they won't keep on taking classes, and we need money for the classes.
Oh. And was this at Pitt? I just want to, or were you still at UCB?
This was at UCB, IO, you know, I changed it when I was at the Pitt.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
You know, but I was just like, okay, well, people pay for classes because hopefully they're good classes. And
yes.
You know, and that, you know, if you have auditions, you know, some people will make it. It's just like a play, you know?
Yeah.
that.
Right.
But they would put these teams together where it'd be like, they put all the good people, you know, quote, good people on one team, and then all the other people that they didn't think it was good on another team. And then it was like, okay, great. People have to bring their friends out to these shows, and the people on the, you know, on the less talented team, it was just like torture. You know what I mean? Because it was just like, well, you know, one, they know what you think about them, so they already have like a bad idea of themselves. They kind of feel ashamed as it is.
Yeah.
You know, and then they would get notes, and they were very like derogatory, you know, just kind of like put, it just felt like, you know, there's like a lot of just impatience and disgust with a team. And it's like, it's not their fault, you know? So I was like, oh, I do that. You know, like if somebody's not getting it, you know, it's like, well, maybe you should repeat a class, or you got to just be able to be honest, you know, don't be afraid. Don't lie to people. It's just like, all right, well, upper classes, you know, they can cater to people that are more likely to want to pursue this as a profession.
Right.
But, you know, there can be classes that people get to perform in and still continue. So I thought it was just good to have an honest relationship with people and go, okay, well, here are things you're struggling with. You're still, you know, you don't tend to yes-and your partners, or you struggle with listening, and, you know, you seem to get a little bit lost in the form, you know, like, you got to just be able to give feedback. And so that, to me, I thought was at the heart of the dysfunction of the whole organization. Mm. And there would be resentment, too, which is like, you know, you're resenting the person because you feel bad. So
yeah,
just be honest. So that was kind of like my whole deal.
Yeah, I think that really pervades the whole institution. And I think that's a lot of the reason why people felt like the Magnet was able to keep going and bounce back after the worst of the pandemic and things started to open up again. I know a lot of it was behind the scenes stuff that you guys worked really hard to. It didn't just magically come together. But yeah, I think that culture of like honesty and welcoming people and yeah, just creating this community that really feels like a community.
And there's a lot of great people, you know, who you may not be the strongest improvisers, but are really, you know, fun to get to know. And, you know, but when you got that insecurity, like, and I think that's where it came from, like a real sense of insecurity where, you know, you can't look somebody in the eye and you got to avoid certain people because, and it's just like, I never walk into the theater and scan the room and worry about like who's there, you know, and I'm happy to talk to anybody, you know, because,
right.
You know, I got,
yeah.
You know, there's no reason why I wouldn't.
Yeah.
I just want to second that note about culture, because I joined Magnet in 2016 and I had done improv at UCB and a couple classes at Pitt, and learned a lot, had a really great experience. And then I came to Magnet and I remember thinking, this is the most comfortable I have ever felt doing improv. Like, it was this very profound, I have never felt more comfortable doing improv here. It was so psychologically safe. It was so warm. It was so supportive. And that type of environment allows you to take risks and to experiment and to fail in front of people and feel okay doing that. And so I am just so grateful that you started it, because it's really like, it's personally meant so much to me and my life. So,
Well, thank you.
You nailed it. You nailed it.
Yeah, I like it too.
I didn't know you actually founded Pitt as well. That's new information to me. That's awesome. When did you decide to also go and make Magnet?
Well, it was after a year. You know, I really had just, you know, interpersonal issues in that partnership. And again, you know, trying to explain where it's just like, you know, because I think it felt a lot of times that it was just like, you know, who I was working with couldn't be bothered to really kind of have deeper discussions about the culture. They just kind of wanted like, we'll just teach classes, we'll make the money, you know, like, and I think there was like a big emphasis on you know, kind of product or, you know, like emphasis on, I think money, like money kind of came first, but I also felt like, you know, there was kind of a personality where shiny, sensational ideas were things that kept his interest, but not like fundamental, like structural things. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you just want to have your dessert, but you don't want to like eat what you need to eat or whatever. He didn't, mm-hmm. you know, so I always ran into problems with like the hard stuff, you know, it's like, how are we going to, you know, do the things that are going to ultimately make us more successful later? You know, it's just like a lot of instant gratification. And comedians were kind of messed up, you know, like a lot of people are kind of dysfunctional, that they, you know, they could have big egos or they could have intense insecurities. It becomes a problem. You know, people just don't communicate.
Got it. So there was just a difference of philosophy. And so then you founded Magnet in 2005. And here we are. Just like that, right? It wasn't hard or anything?
No, it worked super hard.
Wow, you were so wrong, Ellen.
I thought it was just, you know.
Wow, you thought it was easy and it's actually hard.
You were the wrongest. You could be no more wrong.
I'm embarrassed for you.
It's embarrassing.
No, I left. And so then it was like, I had no form of income. I'm on my own. UCB hated me. They were really angry about the split. So I was kind of persona non grata there. So anybody that was my friend wasn't really in contact with me. Mm. You know, so I was like a man without a country. Mm. And I remember just kind of being depressed for a couple weeks, not even able to get out of bed.
Oh, it's awful.
And so the first thing I did was just like, you know what? I got to like get back to doing the thing I know how to do. So the first thing I did was like, I offered a free class. I was like, I just posted it up on the web saying like, hey, you know, I want to thank the community for, you know, all these years to be able to like work with them and stuff. So first come, first serve, sign up for this improv class for free. So I did a 6-week improv class for free just to teach. And I didn't make any money off it. It cost me money. I had to rent the space and all that kind of stuff. But it got me off, you know, got me out of the apartment. And getting the response of like, oh, okay, people were digging the class. It just kind of reminded me like, yeah, this is what I should be doing. So then I started offering indie classes. And so I did that for 2 years. So I was kind of competing on my own with UCB and Pitt, you know, for students. So then I would rent a couple of nights at a place called, they called it Juvie Hall, but it was at the, I forgot the guy's name. But it was like a Lower East Side theater. So it's like a 40-seat theater. I would have like class shows there and performances and things like that. And so I already started doing what a theater would do. So it just kind of made sense. Like, okay, well, I might as well just do this 7 nights a week. You know, then it was about like going around looking for space and trying to find a space to be rented.
Yeah.
You know, but that took about 2 years. Mm. But it got to a point where I remember like the darkest point was just like I had a class with only 3 people in it. And instead of canceling the class, I was like decided to teach it. And I remember there was one day where the other 2 people didn't show up. No. And it was one person.
I'm sorry.
And the guy was like, okay, man, let's start class. I was like, well, there's only one person here. It's like, that's okay. So I did 3 hours with one person.
Huh. That's amazing.
How do you do that?
Oh, it was, I improvised a lot with a guy.
Oh, you did. Cool. Yeah, you would do scenes with
him. That's cool.
Yeah. Oh, he must have loved that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. And it wasn't the, out of the three, it wasn't the one that I would have picked to. Unfortunately, you know.
Oh. Yeah,
that's dedication.
I feel like I've heard certain experienced improvisers. I think it was Matt Walsh say that he can do a good scene with anyone, which is a little cocky. But I'm wondering, I kind of buy it.
Sure.
Yeah. Do you think there's a point where you can just do a scene and it's good with anyone?
I don't think everybody could do that. I think there are certain people that are really like, one, they're good listeners and they're very empathetic and they're like, they can really kind of play off of the other person, you know? You know, because it's a difference between somebody who's like, oh, I'm going to have a funny idea and you need to support it. Well, that person might not support it. And so then it goes nowhere. But if that person like knows how to like, you know, kind of mold around you, then whatever you do that's kind of funny and unusual, they can really make the best of.
I once saw Kevin Cragg do a scene in a mixer with somebody who just didn't seem to understand what improv was. And it was amazing. He was amazing. He was just like yes-anding everything this person was saying.
Yeah.
I just want a correction. I think it was actually Ian Roberts who said that.
Oh, okay.
Ian Roberts is just a machine, you know, like that. He was created to improvise. You know what I mean? Like, he's just in that mode 24/7, you know, like that he just, yeah, I think he could improvise with anybody.
Yeah. I don't know. That's the dream. For me.
Okay.
You know.
It's a good goal.
So I want to talk about my journey with the Magnet, which was 5 stars.
Oh, thanks. Out of how many?
No complaints. Out of 5 stars.
Oh, great.
I was going to make a joke, but but no, it's true. I've always been a fan of comedy, a huge fan of comedy, starting with SNL and Monty Python and then Kids in the Hall and Mr. Show and every other sketch show I could get my hands on, like even the obscure. Anyway, loved comedy, loved Whose Line, absolutely loved it. Just would come home every day and watch it and just piss myself laughing. But I never took improv until I was 33 years old when I took the free class because my roommate, he did meetup things. And he just dragged me along. He's like, you want to come to this free improv class? And I was like, okay, Morgan. And we did it. And it was, you know, I mean, I had that feeling that I've talked to other improvisers that have had, it was where something like, it's like a switch was flipped.
Mm-hmm.
It was like everything, every piece of my life came into focus that night. And so I had two feelings leaving that class, which was I was very happy and I was very angry because it had taken me so long to find this. I was like, I should have started 10 years ago. And I had that attitude for so many years of like, I started 10 years too late. When I found out I was older than Peter McNerney, I couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle it.
Yeah. Nobody should be older than Peter McNerney.
Nobody should be older. He's everybody's dad.
That's right.
But yeah, then I took a real quick, finish my journey story. then I took improv sketch because everybody said you gotta take sketch. And I was like, oh yeah, I love sketch. And it did help make me a better improviser. It did help me become a better actor who could learn lines and who could learn an entire script in one night. And then I started, you know, coaching and then I started directing. And then I got to finally teach starting last year and got you, Armando, taught me to teach. And that's when the rest of the pieces fell into place for me of what is the Magnet's, like it clarified and articulated what the Magnet's like ethos was. Because I kind of had an idea of it, but we don't. I don't think it was like codified the same way like UCB, as Ellen and I were just talking about this before we started recording. But relationship, it finally, like, I finally got every part of what that meant, I think. I'm still learning. But can you talk about how you approach teaching improv and what you emphasize, especially for like people who maybe they're not going to become comedic actors?
Yeah, well, I mean, I like to kind of teach it, you know, in kind of more of a naturalistic way, and that it builds on people's instincts, you know, that like, you know, like it encourages people to tap into like their experiences as a person and like, you know, human nature and understand it from that level as opposed to as if they're analyzing a sketch comedy.
Yeah.
Because you don't have that luxury to sit around and brainstorm and toy around. Like, you have to do it in the moment. So it's kind of a slightly different approach, you know, sketch and improv, but like, training people to have like more of an instinct. So yeah, premises can come up, but because it's improv, the premise won't go anywhere unless you have, you know, both the players on board, and both of them are like helping kind of explore that relationship and that idea, you know? And so
yeah.
The thing that I think is super important is that, you know, as much as somebody can initiate and have an interesting idea, it's how the second person relates to it that can make it most interesting. A lot of times people teach that the premise is the only important thing and that the other person's supposed to get what the whole game is based on the initiation. It's kind of like, well, no, you can get a lot of games out of one initiation depending on how mm-hmm. you react to it, you know?
Right.
And that, you know, you're not just a passive player. The biggest thing and the simplest thing is for people to kind of like, make a choice as to who they are and how to feel about that initiation or their action. And, you know, and because of that, you know how to play the scene. You know, you don't have to do it from like a big bird's eye view of what the scene is. You do it from like an internal view. And so it's just like simpler in terms of the mechanics of it, understanding that. And to me, I think that's what has to lead first. And then, you know, later on when you get into the higher levels, you know, you could kind of discuss kind of more the abstract parts of things. You know, you can, you know, you can talk about patterns and mm-hmm. stuff like that, but you could tend to like analyze things after the fact, just to kind of have an appreciation of what's going on. But the biggest thing is like one, being able to kind of do something truthful and spot what's truthful, and then two, you know, just know how to relate to it, you know. And if you could kind of do those three things at first, you got a way better start than, you know, a lot of people get, you know.
Yeah, I tell people when I'm coaching and teaching, I say, you know, if you can just pay attention, agree and add information, and then just react like a real person, that's pretty much all you need to have great scenes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't talk about game or anything like that. I mean, you know, for higher levels, I guess it does come up, but less experienced improvisers really emphasize those things. And reacting like a real person, it's so important. And it's, I think it's hard for people to do that. And it sounds like it would, should be the most natural thing in the world, but sometimes it's hard for people to, you know, if I may make an observation, you can disagree. I think like when you're starting, it's easy to respond naturally. And when you're very experienced, it's easy to respond naturally. But when you're like in the middle there, you're just like, what's the funny, what's the game? What's the response? What's
that's interesting.
You know, and then they're just like, nobody reacts. Nobody talks like that.
Yeah. There's an awareness. Cause like you suddenly understand that there's like a bigger purpose. Like there's a task you got to do. You know, it's like, you know, we got to do a whole show. We got to do a whole Herald. We got to do a whole form. So right. I got to know.
Yeah.
I gotta know what I'm doing. You know what I mean? I gotta be very deliberate about it.
Yeah.
And so that's where teaching those levels has its own challenge of like, you spend a lot of time going through structure, but then you have to get people to relearn the naturalness, you know, like mm-hmm. stop panicking about worrying about where you are in the Herald, you know, just worry about this scene and worry about this moment and stop thinking about, don't think ahead. You know, the key to it is just like you get them to the point where they've run the form enough so that they can do it with their eyes closed. They're not thinking about it anymore. And now you can just play, you know, it's just like, those levels are kind of like rehearsing a play. You know, it's just that people say their lines, but it's clunky and you do it and you feel like this whole thing's going to be a disaster. And you got 1 week before you open and this person still keeps on messing up their lines. But then suddenly there's that moment where it just kind of switches and it's like, wow, we're just doing the play, you know, and it's doing great and it's getting laughs or it's moving people or whatever. It feels like there's no effort, you know?
Yeah. Yes. I love that. I also think it's very funny to think of that period, that in-between period is like that a week before, because that in-between period lasts years. So it's like years of like, of like people not knowing their lines. And I don't know. You gotta really love it to stick with it.
Mm. Yeah. And that's the thing about growing up is that it's just like, you know, you get better at, you're more secure in yourself and your methods or your tools that you don't need instant gratification to constantly urge you on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have the confidence. Okay, this is shitty right now. Don't worry. We're going to keep on. Like good teachers at those levels can be like, okay, you know what? There's all this other stuff that you nailed, which was good. Mm-hmm. Don't focus on like the mishaps or whatever. We'll get through it. Mm-hmm. And then it polishes itself up. And then it, you know, and so some teachers are so insecure that they they freak out at those periods and they kind of create a bigger problem because they panic and think they're never going to get there. And so then they take it out on their students. And it's just like, you know what? You know, it's like, just relax. It's just like, this is going to happen every time. You know, you're going to get to this period. It's like week four. And suddenly it seems like they don't even know how to improvise anymore. It's like, okay, I'm just going to remind you guys.
Yeah.
Slow down. Listen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you know that, then you're less stressful. And then you realize, like, cool, they'll figure it out.
Dennis, you teach level one, right?
Yeah.
And I teach level one. I haven't taught in a while, but I was taught by Rick Andrews, who I believe was taught by you, Armando.
No recognition in Armando's eyes. I don't think he knows who Rick Andrews is.
Rick Andrews. I know me.
Okay, I know. I know who Andrews. I am.
Right.
And you guys are talking at me right now. You're asking me questions for some reason.
This is a good. Yeah, this
killing
is good.
It. You're killing it.
Yeah.
And I love teaching level one. It's such a fun level to teach. What's interesting about it is you end the class by performing an improv form with your name on it, the Armando.
What?
I was hope. This is new to you.
Know that?
No.
Did you know about this?
Oh my God, this is huge.
Oh
my God.
What a scoop.
Yeah, we do a form.
This is humiliating.
Called the Armando.
I hope it's something positive, you know. We're doing a show called Armando. This guy's a dumbass. Watch it.
It's just a mockery. That'd be terrible.
I do have to. Every time I tell the class what the form they're going to be doing is, I always have to pause because I always start to say Armando. And I go, it's the monologue deconstruction.
Are you serious? I call it the Armando.
I call it the monologue deconstruction.
I'm supposed to call it the monologue deconstruction?
I think you can call it whatever you want.
I've never uttered that phrase until now. Monologue deconstruction. I've never said that. I just say the Armando.
Yeah. Well, that's also what it's called.
And then
that's
I say the Armando Diaz experience. Ever heard of it?
And they're like, why are you right in my face? This is so aggressive.
Yeah.
But tell us how you came up with that form and tell us why you choose it for level one.
Well, first off, nobody came up with a form necessarily. It was one of those things that, you know, just like in life, the way things get invented, it's more complicated. It started because, like, Improv Olympic, you know, Sharna was opening her first, like, she was opening a bigger theater, like the one that she used to have on Clark, you know, so it was kind of a big deal. She went from, like, a real smaller theater to now it's like she had this bigger space with two stages and, you know, it was like she borrowed a lot of money to get it. And so she was looking for shows. And at that time, there were a lot of former Improv Olympic performers that got hired to Second City. So they were like performing at Second City. Etta McKay and Dave Koechner were both like, oh, we should do an alumni show, you know, like get a bunch of people that don't perform there now and just get them back and like doing it like an all-star show for that. And so the way it kind of came up was like, I'd quit improv a couple years ago. I was just like, you know, it wasn't going anywhere. And, you know, I'm not the greatest improviser. Like, you know, I'll have my moments, but it's just, it's not the thing that I seek to do. You know, it's not like the thing that like makes me happiest, but I'd quit. And so like me and Kevin Dorff were living in an apartment together. We hung out after Second City, like, and, we were drinking with Dave and, Adam, and those guys brought up the idea of a show. They made up a cast list of like all the best improvisers in Chicago. Must have been like 30, 40 people. And, you know, they're talking about like, hey, you know, they missed doing like really pure improv like they used to do before they were at Second City. Because Second City is like, it's sketch, you know, improv used to generate sketch. And then the kind of improv they end up doing might be just like a scene or something where it's like, it's more about attack than it is about like, you know, kind of like patient discovery or like that. So they're like, oh, I want to, we should do like a really pure improv show. And then the guy's like, well, you know, there's a lot of egos on this list. Like, how are we going to manage all these guys? Like, you know, and Adam came up with the idea of like, why don't we call it the Armando Diaz experience? And, you know, we put Armando in charge and everybody has to serve him.
And, my goodness.
And it was just like, what the, you know, like a weirdo idea. But, you know, we're improvisers, and Dave, as always, like, is, you know, he's like, okay, all right, let's talk about it. He's like, in a sense, I was kind of like the puppet president of this, like, you know, thing where, as the figurehead, you know, I was kind of a weak president or whatever, but, you know, so I was just kind of the central figure, like, the face on it, so that it's like nobody else has a face, I guess, was probably Adam's idea.
To manage those egos.
I guess so. You know what I mean? So it's like puts the attention on me or whatever. But, you know, so they talked about it and they kind of made their plans. I was sitting there just kind of like rolling my eyes like, what the hell? You know, like, okay, we're all drunk. This is just kind of a dumb idea. So then the night ended and then, you know, I woke up the next afternoon, phone was ringing, and then it was Dave. And he goes, I talked to Sharna. She loves it. We're doing it in April. And I was like, what?
Oh, my goodness.
Armando Diaz experience. I was like, what? You know, it's like, yeah, you know. Okay, man, see ya. And then, so then for a couple of weeks, I kept on approaching Dave and Adam. I was like, what is this show? You know, like, I got my name on it, but what do you want me to do? Like, I don't improvise anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, and so they were just like, oh, just do whatever, you know, like, and I just was trying to think of ways I can kind of get involved. And so, the one thing that I thought of, and this came up because of the previous year, a friend of ours had died, you know, and they did a memorial show at Second City at the ETC stage. So our friend Rick Roman died, and so they were booking all kinds of acts for the show. And again, I was still retired, you know, like, and Adam was like, oh, you got to do the show. You know, you're good friends with Rick, and I'm going to put you down to perform. I was like, do what? By myself? I don't have a group. And so I was just like, well, I don't know. I'll figure out something. So I said, like, list me as 10 minutes of Armando Diaz. And I thought I could probably figure out something to fill up 10 minutes at a time. So he booked me in the show. For a couple of weeks, I was trying to come up with things. Like, it was like, maybe I'll do stand-up. I was trying to write jokes. And all of them were, like, shitty. And you know, I couldn't figure out a damn thing to do for the show. And so it's show night, then I show up there, and, you know, my piece is, like, you know, scheduled, like, in the middle, and so you're getting, like, the family doing the movie, you know, and all the greatest, like, improv acts from around the city doing these shows, and the show's rocking, and so, like, in the running order, my name's coming up, and it's like, oh, shit, I better go backstage, and I was like, I don't have anything, you know, and so.
Oh, my God, I'm so nervous.
Yeah, it was so intense. It comes up to my slot, and so the last act ends, they come off, and then, you know, the lights come up, stage is empty, I'm still backstage, like, petrified, like, I didn't even go out, you know, and the lights are, like, on stage for, like, you know, a few seconds, and I was like, ah, fuck, you know, and I was kind of, like, looking at their programs, like, what is this, there's a missing, you know, and so then I, like, finally, like, drag myself out there, and I go, hey, you guys, my name's Armando Diaz. I was friends with Rick. I'm not going to bullshit you. I don't have anything. I just really wanted to be in the show. And I said that, and I was just purely honest. And they roared. They just laughed like crazy.
Yeah.
So then I was like, okay, well, I'll just keep on being honest. Like, hey, do you guys have any questions about Rick? You know, and then people would raise their hands and like, oh, how do you know Rick? And like, I just kept on telling Rick stories and I was improvising monologues and it worked, you know, and I was like, I got away with it, you know, and so I thought, well, maybe I could improvise monologues. And so that's how I came up with, you know, that's how I picked that. But it's not as if that was the first time anybody ever did that. Like, people had done that for forms before, but that was just kind of the last desperate thing I could think of to do that. So, long story short, we're coming up on the premiere night. 2 weeks before the premiere, they're like, oh, well, we should rehearse. I was like, yeah. And so, like, good news. We got Dell. He's going to, like, direct us. I was like, oh, thank God, you know. So we show up the first Saturday, and it's buzzing because, like, everybody's seeing each other and, like, oh, my goodness, this is, like, a wrecking crew of, like, improvisers. You know, it's like Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, you know, Matt Walsh, you know, Dave Koechner, Adam McKay, you know, like, Rachel Dratch, Miriam Tolan, you know, like, Brian Stack, Kevin Dorff, Ian Roberts, Matt Besser, Noah Gregoropoulos, there's probably 10 more people that I haven't listed.
Wow. Yeah.
Miles Stroth, you know, incredible, right? So it's like 30 great improvisers, and I'm just freaking out. And so Del starts the rehearsal. Okay, you know, like, and I said, like, well, I thought maybe I could improvise monologues. All right, let's try that, you know? And so we got people on stage, and then I take a suggestion, and I'm supposed to do a monologue, and I just start kind of fumbling. I was like, who, shoes, I wear shoes,
that's a great start. Or,
you know, disaster, you know, I get edited off, people do some scenes, and then I was like, supposed to come do another monologue, same thing, disaster. So we kind of like did that through the rehearsal. And then I was just super depressed, you know. People are kind of like trying not to look at me, you know. Like,
oh, man.
You know, so the next week, you know, the next Saturday we had a rehearsal. And then Monday was the premiere. You know, first thing I hear, like, when I show up to the rehearsal is like, oh, show sold out. And we got a couple of reviewers coming, you know, so.
Oh, I had this, come on.
Just what you need, more pressure.
Yeah, the Sun-Times was coming and, you know, like, not like indie reviewers, like. The main newspapers from Chicago were coming. So I was like, fuck me. And then the rehearsal starts, and Del starts the rehearsal like, well, on Monday we have the Armando Diaz Experience. One of the things we have to ask ourselves, are we serious about this show? You know, or is this a joke? How is Armando going to be involved in this show? You know, like, you know, maybe we have to figure out some kind of alternative or whatever. He's just basically saying, like, you know, either you succeed or, like, that's it. We're going to just kind of boot you or keep your name or whatever. So that's even more pressure.
Ugh.
And so it's like, all right, let's get started. So we got everybody on stage. And then he says, you know, after you get the suggestion, instead of just starting to talk, you know, it's like, remember those old-time comedians who used to do impressions? And they, like, transform their look and kind of, like, turn into another character. When you get to discussion, I want you to turn around and start transforming yourself. And then when you turn back, give me the monologue. And I was like, okay, all right, it's Dale, I guess I got to do it. So I got the suggestion, and then I turned around. And I was like, what is this? This is stupid. You know, I turned back, and then I gave a monologue, and then it was good. You know, it was a good, solid monologue. Mm. So then they did some scenes off it, and then we edited, and then I came out to do another monologue. I did the same thing, and it was good, and they did some scenes. And then Del goes, okay, I think we got it. All right. You know, and then he left, and that was it. That was the whole rehearsal process. I got to do two monologues, and then it was like, do the show. You know, I mean.
Wow.
And in the moment, I felt better.
And did you
feel
more confident after that?
Well, I mean, I felt better because it was like, you know, I felt redeemed a bit, you know, because I was like, oh, okay, those are good stories. But then the time to think started happening. And so later on that day, I started to lose my voice. I was so nervous. Suddenly, like, my throat was just like all of Saturday, all of Sunday. I couldn't talk. I showed up to work, couldn't talk, you know, and after work, I headed over to I.O. And then finally, just before the show, my voice came back.
Fate.
Yeah. Yeah, my voice came back, and then we did the show. And then the show did really well. It had great reviews. And next thing you know, it was a hit. And that's how the Armando came up.
Yay!
What a great story. Thank you for sharing that.
Sorry, it's a long
my
story.
My heart's beating. No.
No, it's a great story. I've never heard that story.
I've never heard that story either.
Oh, okay. Well, it's long. That's why I can't do it for like a show.
But we've captured it on this
we
podcast.
We do one scene and then it's over, and then the Armando Diaz Experience is over. We should probably start wrapping up pretty soon.
We have to talk about perfection. Armando, do you consider yourself a perfectionist?
I used to be. Then I grew up. Yeah.
Mic drop.
Yeah, that's it. Boom. See you later, children.
No further context.
No, I mean, I was forced, you know what I mean? That it was just like that, you know, the theater itself and having to make it work and having to do a lot of other types of jobs that I wasn't good at forced me to do what I needed to do and not be so whiny about things being perfect and not being impatient with other people, you know, like just demanding, having outrageous expectations of other people. You know, because it's that thing where, as a perfectionist, you can be really demanding on yourself, but then the shitty thing is that you can do that to other people. And and just kind of feel like, well, you should just be like me. You know what I mean? Like, you should want to work 24 hours a day and, you know, and not be satisfied. And it's like, you know, it's like, no, that's not right. You know, and so I think that's one of the things I learned not to do and to, you know, try and forgive yourself. You know what I mean? I think you could punish yourself, or I think you can be self-reflective about the times where you didn't put the work in the steps that you should do in a project. You know, if you wung it, if you winged it, you know, and you didn't prepare and it kind of falls apart, then it's like, okay, then it's on you. And you're like, you know what? Why didn't I take the time? But I think if you follow the process and you do your best, then after that, you have to just accept it and kind of relish what's successful about things. And you know, you have to kind of just not punish yourself if something doesn't, you know, and it's not easy. But the good thing about getting older, and Dennis really probably knows about this, is you get tired. So you don't have time.
Yeah.
You're just like, I'm so tired. That's good enough.
Good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say this, because I didn't want to end that story that I told on a bummer ending, that 33, it's ridiculous that I thought that.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you're a baby. You know,
correct.
I'm a little baby. But, like, if I hadn't had all the, because the good thing about it was that when I did start doing it, I took it very seriously. And also, I'd had all these wonderful experiences behind me that I, you know, that made me the person that I was, that was this that had this unique voice. So,
yes,
you know, I don't want to give our listeners the wrong idea. Like,
you can do it whenever.
Yeah, it's like I had that idea. Oh, I'm too old. And then I grew up.
Yes. Yes. I love
Thank
that.
Thank you, Ellen. I love the snaps. Do you have any advice for our eager young improviser listeners who are starting off their who are falling in love with this art form and are starting off and are eager for any tidbit?
Yeah, I think, you know, keep it fun. You know what I mean? That it's like, as much as you want to achieve or do well, like, enjoy each step along the way, because, you know, there's kind of no end point. There isn't like, that's it, I made it, I'm the ultimate improviser, you know, like.
Unless you're Will Hines, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I mean, but like, he's now bitter about that. He's just like, I wasted my life. You know, think of all the stuff he missed out on because he became ultimate improviser, you know?
Yeah.
No, but, you know, like enjoy it. I think enjoy people. I think look at improv as a chance to get to know yourself, you know, like I think one of the hardest things for people is to be comfortable in their own skin. You know, you got to kind of get to know who you are, and that's the thing that's special that you can bring to improv. It's a journey, you know what I mean? Like, there's always going to, you know, there's an infinite amount to know about yourself. I'm not trying to say, like, you know, get all, like, egocentric or whatever, but, you know, the times when you run into a challenge, then it really is about thinking about, like, okay, why is that hard for me, or why am I struggling, or, you know, like, how do I feel about that? But also later on in the career, kind of having a good identity, like kind of having a strong idea of like what you care about and what matters to you is important during the tough times. Cause like when the phone's not ringing and you're not getting work, or you're working on a shitty show, or, you know, you're having a hard time, you don't have to, you can feel like, okay, you know what? That's this experience. That's this show, but it isn't the end. You know, it isn't, you know, there's, I know there's, other good things out there. I'll get through this. Or you can know when to say no. You know what I mean? By knowing yourself. Like, yeah. Everybody says, like, I should do this because it's a great opportunity, but I really don't respect the work that I'd be doing, and I'd mm-hmm. be very unhappy. You know, that's a hard thing about leaving two theaters, is that that was a very stressful, you know, decision to make for both of them, because it's like,
sure.
I had two theaters where I almost had carte blanche, you know, both of them, you mm-hmm. know, like, to give that up, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I was super unhappy, and I'd rather have nothing and feel good about it than, you know,
yeah.
be, quote, successful and just regret every day of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's great advice.
Yeah.
Great advice for improvisers. Great advice for living life in mm-hmm. general.
Have fun with it, first thing.
And know yourself. Know your yeah. values and follow those over anything else. That's really some wise yeah, words.
Because you're going to improvise like you, not like anybody else.
Yeah.
At first, we imitate people, and that's fine. That's part of learning. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like any kind of like band or whatever, you know, or visual artist is like, oh, right. you know, I'm going to study
yeah.
these.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to play Beatles songs because, the Beatles are great. Like, you know, but you're not going to be the Beatles. You might have elements of that, but know that each experience is a chance to kind of get closer to you, mm-hmm. which is like what Dennis went through. You know, I mean, he was a broken, dislocated person until he found improv.
Yeah, miserable.
He hulked out.
Broken.
Through a fit. He assembled himself. Now he's happy.
I think your reaction, though, Dennis, I think it is positive, because I think your disappointment was just, oh, this is so fun. I want to do this for as long as possible. So I see it as like a positive thing, not like a, oh, you know.
Yeah, it was this feeling of like, this has been there the whole time?
It's like your high school sweetheart.
Yes.
That's like the girl you had a crush on approaches you at the, you know, yes. the reunion. So like, oh, I always had a crush on you. And you're like, what?
You're telling me now?
No.
Yeah. You know what? The story of how me and Robin got together is a little like that.
Oh, my goodness.
But then we'll save that for another episode.
Oh, okay. I wish we had 1,000 more hours.
I do, too. Thanks again, Armando, for taking the time. So thank you for making the time for us.
Appreciate it.
This has been such a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Really fun talking to you guys.
And Armando gathered forces with other Chicago improvisers such as Ed Herbstman to create Magnet Theater in 2005, and it's still going strong today. And Magnet continues to be guided by Diaz and co-owner Sean Taylor. Got to give a shout out to Sean.
Sean Taylor, one of the kindest and
yes.
nicest human beings I've ever met. Love you, Sean.
Absolutely.
Go to magnettheater.com for more information about classes and shows. There are classes and shows happening all the time, virtual and in person. So sign up for a class. There are free classes now and then. Ellen and I are both teachers there, so sign up for level 1 if you're curious about Magnet. Magnettheater.com is where you'll find all that.